Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. You can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, or get a hold of me on Twitter, at Ryan Ballingy. So last week, we didn't do a non-interview version of the show. This week, we're not going to do an interview version of the show. So we did two shows between the last 2 weeks, which is kind of normal, and one of them was Gary Player, so hopefully you enjoyed that. We had a great conversation with him. If you haven't been able to download that yet or listen to it, check it out on iTunes or on golfnewsnet.com. You can find it under GNN Radio, and then the 19th Hole Golf Show. That's the easiest way to listen to those things on demand. But good news is coming. We believe we have a deal in the works where we're going to have a very nice app, which we can use to share podcasts with you each and every week. And hopefully we'll actually be able to do it a little bit more often with this app, which will make it really friendly to listen to under your phone, either on your Apple device or your Android device. So we're looking forward to working with that. And we'll include all of our GNN website content, video content, which we plan to ramp up in the spring as well. So you'll be able to kind of delve into the world of GNN a little bit further come the springtime. And hopefully, if everything works out, we'll get it right around Masters Week, if not the week after. So we're very excited about all of that. But this week on the show, we wanted to talk a little bit about Jordan Spieth and what has happened to this guy in the last few weeks. And if you look at his last three PGA Tour starts, and obviously we're talking Friday of Valspar Championship week, so we've seen what happened in the opening round on Thursday. We don't know what's happened in Friday's second round as Spieth tries to make the weekend. But if you look in two of his last three PGA Tour events, he opened with rounds in the mid-70s. He shot 79 to open at the Northern Trust Open at Riviera, a course that he loves, and finished nearly DFL there for that day. The only player worse than him that day was Steve Bowditch. And we all know where Steve Bowditch is at right now, who was more likely to shoot in the 80s than the 70s in his last 15 PGA Tour rounds. And then you've got this Thursday opening round at Innisbrook, which has been renovated and a little bit up to date and has some new greens. They've been reseeded. They've gone with a different strain of Bermuda. I think it's Tiff Eagle on the greens. But nonetheless, Spieth knows how to play this golf course. He's won on it. He won there last year. This is the first of five title defenses for him in 2015. And what do you know? He shoots 76. And that is not nearly DFL in the field, unlike what happened at the Northern Trust Open. But it's still pretty disconcerting. And the guy does not get off to a good start in two of the last three events. Makes you wonder, okay, well, what's wrong with him? Is he doing something wrong? Is it too much pressure? Is there something wrong with his swing? Is it just golf's hard and he's due for a bad couple of rounds? I'm not sure. And I don't think he knows, and I don't think any of us can claim to know. But what I find interesting about his response on Thursday was, at least with the media, he was his fairly normal self, pretty, not self-assured, but confident in his way, and trying to say that what had happened on Thursday is not necessarily a trend moving forward. It's just something that happened. And hopefully it's not something that will continue to happen, but he'll work his way through it. And then the PGA Tour tweeted its version of their gamer for Spieth that led with a somewhat playful quote shared out of context in the tweet, because you only have 140 characters. And Spieth said something along the lines of, like kind of joking, like, what am I going to do? I mean, there's no point in kicking down a door and hurting myself and having to withdraw from a tournament, like kind of referencing almost a little bit what Jose Maria Olazabal did 10 years ago when he like punched his hand through a wall or something like that in a hotel, broke his hand and had to withdraw or something like that, which I found the quote funny, and I think everyone else did if you understood what he said. But if you didn't understand what he said in the context that he said, which after he said that rhetorical question, he said, no, I'm kidding, I'm fine. And Spieth responded, is that what you guys are like leading with? You know, that's what you're going with to tweet out? Obviously not very happy about that. He deleted that tweet, but not before Jeff Shackelford or someone who sent to Jeff Shackelford a screenshot of that response. And then on Instagram, Spieth posted some kind of picture, and Ryan Lavner caught a troll basically saying that if Spieth doesn't putt well, he's a dud, and he's pretty average at every other skill set in the game. And Spieth responded specifically to that guy and said, before you troll me, basically, you've got to look up your facts. You got to look up the statistics. And I find that fascinating. I find that really interesting that these guys, and we've talked about this before on this show, and I think some folks occasionally look at me skeptically when I say this, that these guys care what you think, that these guys care what the media thinks, that these guys care what is said about them and how they're perceived. They care. They care. They don't care just about winning tournaments. They care about how they're viewed, because how they're viewed has an impact on their bottom line in terms of sponsorship. It impacts their ego. It impacts how they play. I mean, if they think they can win and they think everyone else thinks they're going to win, that gives them that added boost, that added psychological command that maybe you don't just have if you just believe in you, if you're just willing to bet on you. And I just think that that is a little bit of a window into what Jordan Spieth is dealing with right now, because I think in the past he probably has responded to people on Twitter who have said dumb things to him. PGA Tour players do all the time. Jason Duffner routinely responds to idiots who try to troll him. In fact, over the off season, when he was one of the two guys to win the Shark Shootout, he went back to a guy that had tweeted him like, "Hey, when did you win last?" And he was like, "Hey, last week, bozo," basically. And then when he won the Career Builder Challenge in the playoff over David Lingmert, he tweeted that guy again to let him know that he won. So these guys think about it. But Rory McIlroy then comes in to Spieth's defense slightly in response to a tweet from Jason Sobel, who writes for ESPN. And Jason didn't offer a hot take whatsoever. He offered more or less a summation of what the responses he's seen from people are to Spieth's poor round. And McIlroy pretty much said he's not done. He's just a kid who's won two majors. He's going to be fine. And I think that got retweeted like 1,500 times so far that I've seen. I think that there is a general consensus among players that they want to help each other. They want to defend each other from the onslaught of attacks from fans, especially the anonymous ones, and to some extent from the media when it's warranted. And I don't consider them attacks from the media. I think it's more, okay, this is our analysis of the way that you're playing. This is what we're seeing. Here's what the path forward is, or here's what your issue is, or what have you. And I'm sure that those guys take umbrage with that kind of thinking, especially from fans, especially from media, because most folks that play golf, most folks that watch golf, most folks that write about golf aren't very good at golf. They don't know how to play very well, and that is often the athlete's conundrum, that they want someone to speak about their game that knows their game and knows how to play the game. And those are two very important qualifiers, because there are plenty of people in golf that know how to play the game, that have had success. And you look toward Charlie Reimer, who played on the PGA Tour for a number of years. You look at Brandel Chamblee, who played on the PGA Tour for a number of years. You look at pretty much the people that were on Golf Channel that do the analysis week to week. Those people had good careers to varying degrees. Obviously, Nick Faldo is a six-time major champion, so when he's on, when CBS has the rights, he's got a little bit of a different perspective. When David Duval is on, who was world number one, won 11 times in 34 starts, and won an Open Championship, he has a little bit of a different perspective compared to like a John Cook or a Nota Begay or Jim Gallagher Jr., guys who've won on the PGA Tour, which is certainly to be commended, but not necessarily to the same level that a Spieth or McIlroy or Day, et cetera, have accomplished. And then you look at guys like me, who I know how to play golf, and I know how to play really well. I can shoot under par, but I can shoot under par on a fairly easy golf course. I can't shoot under par on a 7,500-yard golf course where there's crap everywhere, and you got to be in the middle, 290 off the tee every time, and if not, you're just going to have a terrible day. I can't do that, and I'm never going to be able to do that. So when I'm looking at someone's game, I am less likely to try to analyze, especially at a professional level, what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong, because I don't know what they're trying to do in the first place. I mean, I could tell you the shot shape they're trying to hit. I could tell you the whole setup, what the ideal shot shape is. Does that work for that player? Are they doing something kind of screwing the setup if it's glaringly obvious? To me, that I think the issue is, but there's that second part, especially in golf, because in other sports, the technique is pretty clear. Like, you know how to swing the bat. You know how to throw a football. You know how to run a route. You know how to skate. You know how to hit a slap shot. You know how to poke check. You know how to run the fast break. You know how to do a ball screen, high-low, all that stuff. If you play that sport at that level, you know what the techniques are and what you're supposed to do. And it's pretty uniform. But if you are in a golf context and you're trying to analyze, there are a lot of different ways to get back to the golf ball at square and get it to go where you're trying to get it to go. I mean, look at the three very different swings of Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, and Jordan Spieth. Throw in Ricky Fowler. Throw in Adam Scott. All those guys have different techniques. Spieth's and Fowler's swings, I don't believe, are nearly as pretty as what you see from Day at his best, McIlroy typically, and certainly not of Adam Scott, who I think all of us would kill somebody to have Adam Scott's golf swing. And then if we had his looks, that would just be a bonus. Because as David Faraday said on the Dan Patrick show last week, he said, with a swing like Adam Scott's, it doesn't really matter what you look like. He, quote, gets more ass than a toilet seat, or would get more ass than a toilet seat because he's married and has a daughter. But it is difficult for even a professional golfer to necessarily have the perfect analysis of what a player is trying to accomplish with their swing and whether it's working for them. Because there are sometimes things that are counterintuitive that get the job done. Look at the way that Spieth kind of bows his hand up at the top. Bob Estes, who is a PGA Tour player, he's on the shelf right now, but he's trying to make a comeback sometime this year, is convinced that that's because he used an overweight driver that was too long for him when he was growing up, and that's how he compensated for it to get the ball in the fairway. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's what he's stuck with all these years with Cam McCormick, trying to just leave that alone, and at some point maybe he makes that change as he gets older, but that works for him now, so why mess with success? And so when these guys, these top players, don't necessarily play that well, they have one bad round, they have two bad rounds, they have two bad final rounds, two bad start rounds, and the analysis comes, oh, well, they're done. Well, no, that's not the way it works. Golf is, I think more than any other sport, the one sport where you can play great and score like crap, and you can play bad and score well. And I've seen both that personally, in competition, not competition, all that stuff. I've put up good numbers when I haven't played all that great, and I've put up not the best numbers when I played great for me. And I'm sure you've experienced the same thing. So to try to get into the psyche and get into the down and dirty with any players around when they have a bad one and a bad one. Now, we're not talking like Steve Bowditch territory where in his last five rounds he is in the 80s, and I think last seven of his 15 rounds are in the 80s or something like that. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about one bad round. Now it's two for both Spieth and McIlroy at different spectrums of the tournament. McIlroy's had bad final rounds in two of his last three events. He missed the cut at Honda, so he didn't play the final round. Spieth has had bad opening rounds in two of his last three events. His opening round at Doral was modest. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't good. It was pretty good. So, these guys don't want to necessarily chalk everything up to, automatically saying that they're done. Or you don't want to have that visceral reaction that really, it's hard to validate. I mean, you just can't say Jordan Spieth is done if he has two bad rounds. Jordan Spieth had some crappy rounds last year. He had some crappy rounds the year before that. And he's evolved as a player to get to here. But I do think that Spieth is facing some kind of mental gap at this point. And he's alluded to it, so I'm not guessing here. Spieth has alluded to the fact that he has felt that he's had trouble in trying to acclimate himself to be the number one player in the world, that there is a learning curve to the expectations that people have of him, that he has of himself being a two-time major winner last year, all the attention that he gets, that every shot is scrutinized, that the bad rounds are magnified in terms of how they're viewed, primarily because he gets that much more attention, and he is an American. You have to remember that in on this soil, the PGA Tour soil, and I can show you the data from our website, that people care more about American golfers than they care about internationally born golfers, even if they're great. It's just the truth. And I think that's partially because the casual fan is more in tune with American golf, the best American golfers, than they are with the international scope of the sport. Now, that changes obviously overseas. It changes in different countries. But I think, by and large, people are more interested in Jordan Spieth than Jason Day and Rory McIlroy combined in this country. So he's getting even more scrutiny than the other two guys do. And they're also having problems. I mean, Jason Day has not played all that well coming out of the gate this year. And he had a pretty surprising MC at the Farmers Insurance Open, his first title defense of the year. He took a bunch of time off to be around when his wife Ellie gave birth to a second child. His life has changed a little bit. It takes time to readjust to that. Again, we've talked about this before in the show. Life events matter. Things that happen off the course matter. They impact your game. They impact your time. They just impact your mindset. All of those things add up. Rory McIlroy is under a different set of pressures. He didn't have the best year last year, and he missed his title defense in a major championship, becoming the first guy in 62 years to do that. That's probably something that weighs on his mind somewhere. And on top of all that, he's got to plan a wedding for the second time, and hopefully he doesn't bail out of this one. And I assume that he won't. That was kind of mean. But, you know, at that point, he's got other things to worry about. So if he's got other things to worry about, then golf isn't front and center at all times. And all of these guys at different points seem to be pressing those three guys at the top to try to validate or invalidate, in the case of McIlroy, what happened last year. McIlroy's trying to prove that he is the best player in the world and that when everything clicks, he's the best, and that he doesn't need to be streaky and that he can be consistent and all of those things. And now he's left hand low, and sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not, so it's really not different than the standard putting stroke. You got Spieth, who needs to get a little bit longer in his mind, and he's tried to push that, and that's not working all that great. And I think he's trying to get out to a hot start to show everyone, including the field, that he's the boss and that he's the guy that runs this place, and that's really obvious. So, you know, Day is on the other hand, okay, I've got to get my instinct back. I mean, he's alluded to this in interviews as well. That's why he reached out to Tiger Woods leading into, well, what was it, Honda or something like that, or Doral is what he was saying, that he spoke to Tiger Woods because he felt like he had lost his killer instinct and that Woods always had it, that he always had a goal that Woods always had, whether it was a major, whether it was just a win, whether it was a stomp on someone's throat, whatever it was, Woods always was motivated and he always played that way. And motivated in a proper way, not by fear, but by something to reach for. And in the opposite context, you've got Day who's like, well, my goal was to win a major. I've done that. It's over. My goal was to reach number one. I did that. It's over. Now what do I do? And he's basically said, I have no goals. I don't have a next thing. And so he's got to identify that. And I think that, and we've seen a little bit of research about this. I think in the last week I read an article about this, about kind of the depravity that people have. And I think it was Kyle Porter at CBS who mentioned this, and it was really interesting. Kind of the depravity that people have who are particularly driven, excuse me, to when they accomplish something, say, okay, well, that's it. That's the feeling. Okay, well, I need to do that again. I need to come up with something else. Like, that can't be all that there is. And you're driven by the next goal. And I'm that kind of person. I think, you know, when you hit a milestone in your career, the question is, how long do you bask in it? And if it's like a week, you're probably someone who is perfectly satisfied with accomplishing either big things and just kind of letting the smaller stuff go, or you're not that driven by achievements, whatever. That doesn't necessarily define who you are, but there are a lot of things you could read into that. And then you kind of go down the other path. You go, okay, well, when you accomplish something, are you really all that interested in it? Or did you expect it of yourself and you just demand the next thing? So the single achievement isn't the achievement. It's achieving achievements again and again and again. And, well, that's kind of what Day has defined. What is it? What is the next goal? And does that next goal have to be so much bigger than those first sets of goals, which he's already accomplished? And he did it in one season. So does he have to go and say to himself, all right, well, I need four majors, and that's what I'm going for. And then how do you figure out how to get to that week to week on the PGA Tour? Goal setting would be a fascinating discussion to have with players of all ilk on the PGA Tour, whether you're a top 50 player, top 10 player, whether you're just trying to get by. I would think I'll use the example of Charles Howell III. Charles Howell III this week could cross, I think, the $30 million mark in PGA Tour earnings. He's got, what, one win? And he still maintains his card every year. He has really no problem in doing that. He gets into the playoffs. He has a few top fives and top tens, and pretty easily holds on to his status. It, in some sense, is that an easier goal or an easier way to survive on the PGA Tour year to year, but not get too high or too low? Because you worry about week to week. Okay, well, I like the following courses. I like Honda. I like Valspar. I like Vegas. I like this. You know, these are the courses I like to play. All I have to do is do well in these, and my year is set, if you're Charles Howell III. So maybe that makes it a little bit easier for him to, again, make money, have a really nice career, but it's really hard for him to win because that's not what drives him day to day. And you look at the same thing at a Jason Day or any of the top players, you go, okay, well, if they're driven by major championships, you only get four cracks at those a year. So how in the world do you motivate yourself from week to week for the tournaments that aren't majors? And I think that's the balance point. I think that's what Tiger did so well, is that he put emphasis on the process of getting ready for the majors. So, and Nicholas did the same thing, although it was kind of unwittingly because he wasn't really trying to break anybody's mark. He just happened to, and then obviously went well beyond Walter Hagen. And you get to that point where you have to decide, what's the value of week to week? And if you can't find the value, then what do you can't get up for it. If you can't get up for it, then you're bound to have a letdown. And I think that motivation, what keeps you going week to week, is a big question mark for these guys moving forward. And Spieth is a guy who likes to plan. He likes to have a game plan. He likes to know what he wants to do at a tournament. And when he doesn't play according to the plan, that doesn't mean that the plan is wrong. It just means he was wrong that day in executing the plan. Does that mean the plan has to change? No, it does not. I mean, in some sense it does. I mean, obviously he's 9 back of the lead going into today. The goal now changes from defending the Valspar Championship, at least in the short term, to playing 2 more rounds after today. And if he can do that, then he is set and achieved the goal for the day. And then the next goal on the Saturday is, okay, I probably got a pretty early tee time. I need to shoot a really good number to give myself an outside chance at winning this thing. Because right now, the way it looks like it's going to be difficult to score. Looks like the winning score might be 10, 12 under par at best. So Spieth, where he's at right now, has to play basically 17 under par golf through the rest of the week to win. So do you view it that way? Do you view it as 3 rounds, or do you view it as 1? Because you got to make the cut immediately. So do you go, okay, I need to be 3 under, 4 under today. I'll get to the weekend. Then on Saturday, I need to be 6, 7 under. And then on Sunday, I need to get to 5 under. I need to shoot 66 to finish, and maybe I sneak this thing out. I mean, I don't know how he's going to view it. But the plan now is to change. You stick to the revised plan. So all that is to say that I don't necessarily think that there's any real issue here with Spieth. And I don't think that any of us are qualified to say what's really going on in his head. I think we can ask questions. I think that's fair. I have no problem in asking questions about what's going on with a player, whether in terms of their technique, whether it's in terms of their mental approach, whatever it is. I think there's a lot of value in being able to ask those questions, because as fans, you want to know. You want to know what those guys are going through, probably in part because you're going to go through the same things on the golf course. But you want to know, have some empathy for what they're trying to deal with. And when guys like Spieth and McIlroy kind of speak out about people, either in the media or just your average Joe fan that has an opinion about how they're playing, I think that's kind of discouraging in some sense, but encouraging in another, because they believe in themselves so much to the point, and you have to, obviously, to be a really good professional golfer, professional athlete, but that they're willing to say, look, things happen, we're working on it, and we'll figure it out. Now, if this keeps happening with Spieth, and he's got a couple more tournaments before the Masters, so he's going to play in the Dell Match Play, and then he's got the Houston Open, and the Dell Match Play is a little bit different. He knows Austin Country Club. He went to UT Austin. He's probably played there. He's got a little bit of a hometown thing, so he'll feel a little bit of a different pressure, but it's also match play, so it's not an 18-hole round necessarily, but how does he come out of the gate in the first match in the round-robin play? Does he wax whoever he plays? Or does he get waxed? Or is it close? I mean, that has some psychological impact too. And then you go to Shell Houston Open, a tournament where he didn't win, but he got into a playoff to win last year, lost it to J.B. Holmes. Is he going to apply the same pressure to himself that he does for the Valspar Championship because he got close? Is it even more because he got so close to winning but came up a little bit short? And does he feel like he's got to replicate in some way the lead into the Masters from last year, which was so good for him and gave him clearly some confidence going into the Masters and feeling like he could play really good golf? And then once he got out of the gate and proved he was playing really good golf, it kind of went to autopilot. You know, he knew he had the week he was going to have and stayed engaged nonetheless, but he probably knew after 36 holes this was his to lose, and he played that way, played brilliantly with the lead, and figured out how to win at Augusta. So I'm very interested to see where this takes Spieth. I'm interested to see what McIlroy does from here. He's got to play the API next week, and we'll see what that means for him. He's got issues in the final rounds of tournaments, as we mentioned at the top of the program. So you go from there, and then you've got Adam Scott, who is playing incredible golf. He's won his last two starts, first guy since Billy Horschel in the second half of the FedEx Cup playoffs in 2014, to win in back-to-back weeks. That's a big deal. But do you peak too early? I don't know. I mean, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. I don't necessarily believe in peaking too early. If you're at your peak, if you could stay at it, then you would want to peak forever. But inevitably, something changes, and you, especially in golf, and you can't be at your peak. But I think if you're looking at it, the idea of the big three and all that jazz, it might be time to retire that for a little while, and it might be time to just appreciate what we've got. And we've talked about this in the show before. While it's a little premature to create a big three or big four, because there are other players out there. Now, we thought about the young guys, Tony Finau, Justin Thomas, other players like, and Ricky Fowler, other players like that who could kind of crash that party, Brooks Koepka. And we didn't think about guys in their mid to late 30s like Bubba Watson and Adam Scott, but there they are. They're not going away. They're not going away yet. So they've still got the talent. They've still got the length. They've still got the drive. It's going to be a really interesting few weeks leading into the Masters. I think we're going to get an all-time great Masters. Not that we didn't last year. We just got it in a different way from the kind of command that Spieth showed at Augusta National. But I think we're going to get a dramatic finish and might be one of the best of all time. So that has me absolutely excited. And the fact that my wife is less than 4 weeks away from delivering our second child. So that also has me very excited. So you may not see a lot of me during the Masters, but I assure you we'll have a whole bunch of Masters stuff for you on GNN and through Yahoo Sports too. So until next week, that's been our show. I really appreciate you listening to us. Please give us a 5-star review if you're on iTunes and leave your comments and questions with that 5-star review. We'd love to see what you think about the show, either our interview shows, this one, whatever you have to say. We'd love to hear from you. Give me a follow on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. If you are a Snapchatter, give us a follow at Golf News Net. We do snap some things and have a little fun over on Snapchat. So give us a little bit of love over there. The 19th Hole Golf Show has been presented by BetDSI.com. We use BetDSI.com's odds every week for our PGA Tour odds posts and our occasional European Tour odds post. We love that they give you real-time betting percentages so you know where the money is at on the book and you have a good idea of what the public is thinking heading into each week's tournament. So check out BetDSI.com. You can find that on our website with our weekly fantasy advice. Also, check out GNN Plus, which is our membership site for $3 a month to $30 a year. You get an ad-free experience with access to all of our best fantasy research and some more tools coming, including a queryable database of PGA Tour results from players. And we're going to add some additional week-to-week statistics that we'll update for you that we find important as well. And then on top of all that, if you're an annual member for the $30, you get a free USGA handicap from ushandicap.com. And you just have to contact me when you sign up for the service, and we get you all hooked up for that too. So if you're looking for a digital handicap, a handicap that is USGA certified that you can input your scores online or through an app, we got you hooked up if you're a GNN Plus member. So until next week, I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.